Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up today, the Colorado-based quartet called Yonder Mountain String Band returns to our studio to demonstrate why their brand of neo-bluegrass has caught on with the jam band set. Also, an exercise machine that not only keeps you sweating, but allows you to make music while you work out. We'll hear about a device used in a recent study. Now, that device isn't available to consumers yet. For the moment, we're just going to have to keep using our iPods and whatever. And I have no doubt that the rapper M.I.A. has appeared on more than a few exercise playlists. That's called Galang, the breakthrough track that introduced M.I.A. to the world back in 2004. Over the next 9 years, she would release a trilogy of studio albums. Arular was named for her father, Kala was named for her mother, and Maya was named for herself. M.I.A. grew up, Maya Aruprakasam, in London and Sri Lanka. Here's her 2007 massive international hit, Paper Plane. Everyone's a winner, we're making our fame. Bonafide hustler, making my name. Now, M.I.A.'s music career has been marked by any number of eyebrow-raising moments. In 2009, she held her own at the Grammys, performing alongside Jay-Z, Lil Wayne, T.I., and Kanye West. No small achievement, considering she was the only rapper on stage who was 9 months pregnant. In 2012, she performed with Madonna during the Super Bowl halftime show and drew the ire of the NFL when she raised a middle finger to the camera. That incident is the subject of an ongoing lawsuit. Tomorrow, with a bit of controversy naturally, M.I.A. will release her first album in 3 years called Matangi. That's her actual birth name and the name of a Hindu goddess. M.I.A. joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Maya, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, everyone?
Good.
Matangi in the building.
I had never heard of this goddess, Matangi. And the story goes that you kind of found out about her during this process of making this record, right?
Yes.
So,
it was right at the start. I wasn't actually going to make a record, but I guess, after I put out the mixtape, Vicky Leaks,
yeah.
I took some time out and went to India to work on some art, and I was part of the Kochi Art Biennale that was happening. So I wanted to just make some pictures, and then I came across it for the first time.
And she's the goddess of what?
She's the goddess of spoken word, which is really good because I'm dyslexic. So I was like, oh, this is cool. It's like putting someone on the map that doesn't need to, that doesn't write things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like discussing Jesus Christ or Muhammad or something where it's more about the written text and writing on the stone and stuff like that. And this goddess was about words and the meaning and the power of music and how it's related to words and truth and blah, blah, blah. It's very complicated and complex. But
also really appropriate.
It's appropriate, but yeah, it was really inspiring because at that time I was very, not very inspired, musically.
Why?
Because I felt like it was a bit too restricted. And I tried to sort of explore what you can be as a musician. And, you know, I just felt that it was limited. And then I thought that was me not being able to do it, you know, and play the game of the business and stuff. So it was nice to find a concept of music which predates that, you know. And that's what I think attracted me to it in the first place, because I was like, wow, to learn the concept of music from like the ancient kind of Hindu philosophy it made me think about it differently.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know if you grew up with like the kind of the really ancient Vedic chanting, like M.S. Subbalakshmi, people like that, where mm-hmm. it's like they're almost like patter songs. It almost sounds like 4,000-year-old rap. You know, it's just like that kind of spoken word as music.
Yeah, I mean, it's about the vibration of, you know, the tones and the sonic of, you know, the word.
Mm.
And so it was, you know, the last album I wrote, Maya, when I wrote it, I think I had such a strong reaction to finding out, you know, that we were capable of inventing, you know, sonic cannons that can blow people up at protests and things. And mm-hmm. it made me kind of really lose faith in music, you know, because I didn't know as a musician what you could make that counteracts something like that, you know. But I knew that there had to be, for whatever that we have invented that goes that way, there is a counteractive thing. You know, you could make music that's powerful enough to do the opposite to human beings. This kind of explained that. No.
So the results are this new record by MIA called Matangi. Let's mm-hmm. hear a track from it. This is called Bring the Noise from MIA's new album, which comes out tomorrow.
I'm so tangy, people call me my tangy. But there's a word, bitches, I'ma keep it banging. Truth is like a rotten tooth, you gotta spit it out. Let the bottom two, let my wisdom work it out. Big on the underground, can't knock me down. Picky leaves, bitches, bad body, don't demand. I sleep on my tongue and then I stand by it too. I can say lots with the little words if you like. Them had them, yeah, me, the madam, y'all. Introduce you to the dooms and dooms. Come let me go, do you like my perfume? Made it at home with some gasoline and shrooms. Oil and water are two extremes. We like carpets, you like booms. Why is your tattoo smuggling?
A little bit from MIA's Bring the Noise from her new album, Matangi. MIA, born Maya Arul Pragasam, but Maya was not your actual factual name.
No.
It's Matangi.
It's Matangi Arul Pragasam.
Yeah.
Mm. Matangi.
And so the album title doesn't have the H. Mm. But other than that, it sort of follows a pattern. Your first album, Arular, named after your dad, then Kala, named after your mom, Maya, your nickname, and now this record, which is getting towards your real name. So is there a process here of, I don't know, self-discovery or something like that?
I guess. I mean, initially, you know, I named my first album after my dad because A, I wanted to find him, but B, I'd heard the story when I was growing up in Sri Lanka, you know, when I was like 5, 6 years old. I learned this story about Shiva and his wife. They had two sons and they had one fruit and they didn't know which one to give it to, so they gave them a competition and they said, you know, whoever could go around the earth the fastest is going to win the fruit. So the one son called Muruga, who's a god, he traveled on a peacock. He jumped on the peacock to fly around the world. And the other son was Ganesha with the elephant trunk. Mm-hmm. He travels by a mouse. So he was like, well, I'm not going to be a peacock. So he basically walked around his parents three times and said, you're my world, and like, you know, kiss their feet or whatever, and then he wins the fruit because the parents are like, wow, that's kind of genius.
That's kind of cool, yeah.
and the other son gets back and he's really, you know, pissed off, and then he walks and, you know, leaves the kingdom. And there's like a massive story about this in the mythology, but the only story I remembered in the entire Hindu mythology, and I know there's like 164 gods or whatever, was that one. Hmm. And for some reason, you know, even though I wasn't religious, I thought that story was cool, so I was going to just call it after my mom and dad and mm-hmm. cover the world, even though everyone's like, oh, she's a world artist. The concept of the world, I wanted to, you know, to deal with in my records, but also the concept of the world I wanted to cover by including my mom and dad. And Maya, it's funny, I had no concept of why I called it Maya at the time, but everybody was like, you know, call it after your baby because you just had a baby. And I didn't want to do that to, you know, like, I didn't want to, yeah, I just didn't want to do that. Yeah. And so I was left between choosing MIA or Maya, and I chose Maya, but at the time I didn't realize that it's my fake name, you know. And it, the concept of Maya, though, tied in with what Maya actually means in terms of illusion. You know, it is about being fake and it's about the material world. And so it's sort of, when I look back, it's appropriate why it was called Maya, and it's the record that was, you know, about the illusion and truth and lies and, you know, information and the power of that. And, you know, like I said, the power of sonics and all these things, you know, it's about, it was about the ugly and the beauty and
the material world.
And the material world and how to sort that information out and get past it, you know.
Now, it was also your most, I mean, commercially, materially successful record so far. I mean, just in terms of the kind of penetration into the market, we on the heels of that record, we saw you with The Material Girl at the Super Bowl. With whom, I mean, you actually co-wrote that song with her, right?
Yeah.
The MDNA song.
Yeah. I named that album, by the way, which nobody knows. Yeah.
Really?
MDNA.
Were you aware that that would turn out to be a somewhat controversial name? She's taken a bit of flack for that.
But yeah, it's funny. I naturally just am controversial, isn't it? No matter what I do. Even if it's me or, you know, it's like me working with someone else, it just turns out that way.
Yeah. So there you are. The globe is watching. It's the Super Bowl. Madonna's singing. Nicki Minaj is there. You are there. And when you flip the bird to the camera, that's all anybody's talking about for the next year and a half. It's, you know, NFL is suing you. Normally, when someone is filing a lawsuit, you're very circumspect. You're not allowed to say anything. But you've been saying stuff.
Yes, because we were in, like, you know, I guess we were trying to work out some sort of a deal, and I wasn't talking for a year and a half because I didn't talk about it. And but there were some disagreements, and you know, the NFL started it back up. So at this, you know, at this point, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do and not supposed to do. But initially, we said, you know, it's a cultural thing because where I come from, it's not offensive, and they sort of laughed in my face. But 2 months later, I found out the Matangi mudra, it actually is the middle finger.
The mudra, those are the hand gestures.
Yeah, the hand. It's sort of like, it's kind of, it goes with rap music. You know, in America, we have like gang signs that we throw up. But in, you know, India, like in the ancient times, these hand signals were made up to represent different, you know, concepts and gods or meditating poses, and they're called mudras. And the one, usually they're not named after gods, but this one, it's specifically named after Matangi, and it is the middle finger. So it was kind of funny how that worked out.
Yeah. We are speaking with MIA. Maya, I was saying Arul Pragasam, but you sort of say it differently, right?
No, that's Arapagasam.
Arapagasam, yeah. Which is your father's name, right?
Yes.
Okay. You were saying before that when you released the first album, Aralar, in part that was to kind of get in back in touch with your father, who was a freedom fighter in Sri Lanka. You hadn't seen him for many years. When he finally got back in touch with you, what did he say about that album?
He didn't really say anything about it. I don't think any of my family really took it seriously that I was like a musician until maybe 5 years after. Mm. So at that time, it was, you know, I remember bringing my first demo home, which was Galang, and I played it in my house, and my brother literally took it out of the CD player and put it in the bin. He was like, this is crap. And it's kind of like, yeah.
The story I had heard was that your dad said something like, you can't call the album that.
He did say that. He wanted his name back. But I was like, it's the only thing you gave me and I'm going to use it. So
the new album is called Matangi. It comes out tomorrow from MIA. Let's hear another track. This one is called Yala. And is this your kind of response to the YOLO, you only live once thing?
Yes, I think it's important to you know, have a wide horizon and expand the options for people. So I think as long as we have YOLO, it's important to also have, you know, a different concept. And it just sort of worked out that it kind of sounds good.
And YALA stands for?
You always live again.
You always live again.
Yeah.
Let's hear it from the new album called Matangi by M.I.A.
When I enter the building.
That's from MIA's new record called Matangi, which is out tomorrow. We are speaking with MIA here in the Soundcheck studio. And Maya, the story here, I mean, a couple of your records had delayed releases, but the story here is that you really had to almost put a gun to Interscope's head and say, release this or I'm going to leak it.
Yeah.
So is that, I mean, why does this seem to continually happen? I mean, wasn't Maya kind of a delayed release as well? A couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Not long enough for me to take notice. But this one was more kind of frustrating. But I think it's also, you know, generally, maybe the record label had a plan for me, you know, and that I didn't know about it, because a lot of people always say if I release the Maya record now, it would be right on time with everything that's going on. But it just happened, I released it, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And
before all the revelations about the NSA and spying.
Exactly.
And all that
it was completely irrelevant to people. And so maybe the label was like, okay, the next time she makes a record, we're going to put it on hold for 2 years because, you know, wait.
But see, one of the things I think many of us loved about, you know, the early records was this sense that you were driving the bus. And here, you know, there was a sense that someone else was in charge and you had to actually, you know,
go with it. Well, that was, you know, because the thing about Matangi is, you know, when you're embracing this concept and you're making a record and then you sort of are manifesting things around it that are, you know, because it's when you make a record, you have to take all that into consideration because it does have an effect on your life and you affect other people's lives and it's a big deal. And, you know, the business side of it couldn't be, you know, it had to be, you know, I had to have a new approach basically. I couldn't be the same. And I thought, you know, it's my first record with Interscope for Worldwide, which hadn't happened before. because I was on XL and then licensed to Interscope. And so I didn't know what that was. I didn't know how to communicate directly to Interscope because usually I'd make the record with XL. Mm-hmm. And so it was like a lot of new territory. And I think, you know, I just thought it was too cliched that I would leak it and have a fit. So I was just really like trying to break that ban, you know.
Although,
like,
you know, having the option of leaking your own music is something that other generations of musicians never had. You know, it's like...
Exactly. So, of course, I can leak the album. I could just take it to Julian Assange, you know. But it's like I wanted to just, you know, it was about the collaborative process because I didn't want... I'd already, you know, been in this situation after Super Bowl where they were like, you peed on the American flag, you know, and that's how... Interscope's press agent, you know, reacted to it as well. And I really felt completely, you know, an outsider at this point. And I didn't feel like I was connected to a particular team here. And I'd moved to England and I was making the record there and stuff. So, you know, it was like I didn't want it to be attached to the back of that feeling, you know.
Well, you know,
because it's not that, you know.
It's funny you mentioned Julian Assange of WikiLeaks because you have worked with him, right?
Yeah.
On this song called Attention from the new record. What was his role there?
He decrypted the internet and downloaded every tent word. So any word that has the word
decrypted
T-E-N-T. I don't know what he did, but I basically had to write that song, you know. To think of every word that had tent in it, you know, I was kind of like really, I must have had about 40 or something, maybe not even that many. And so he came in to work on the theme song for his TV program, The World Tomorrow. And so I explained the concept of the song, which he liked, you know, because he's smart. And he was like, oh, I could get these words for you. And then he took my computer and then I was, you know.
And came up with all these words with tent
in
it.
Yeah, I was like, what's he doing? And I don't know what he did to my computer because he just went, brr, 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 brr. You know, it was just like.
All right, well, I hope by now you have a new computer.
Yeah.
Matangi is the name of the record. It comes out tomorrow, the latest from MIA. We'll hear this song called Attention. And Maya, it's been great having you with us here in the Soundcheck studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The fullest extent of my intent is to let you know what is important. My existence is militant, cause my content bangs like it's potent. This term to the pollutant, never hesitant, always consistent. I back it up, yeah, I'm very blatant. Don't try to copy this cause I patent. Running on the streets causing tension.
Just a bit more music from Matangi, the song Attention from the new album by MIA. Coming up, everyone knows you can listen to music while you exercise, but what if you could make music while you exercise? Hear about the results of a new study next. And then later, live music from Yonder Mountain String Band. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. What you hear on the show every day is just the tip of the iceberg. Over on our website, there's videos, more music from our live guests, and nearly every afternoon, you can hear a live performance at 2 p.m. Also on our website right now, stream an entire concert by Arcade Fire, performing songs from their new album, Reflector. Here's a bit of the show. It's Arcade Fire performing It's Never Over, Hey Orpheus, live at the Capitol Studios in L.A. last week.
Just
Arcade Fire performing their song It's Never Over from the new album Reflector, just a bit of the band's performance last week in L.A. recorded by NPR Music and streaming on our website at soundcheck.org. Know that music's good for a workout, preferably something fast and rhythmic and loud, but did you know that science has proven it? What's more, a new study finds that making music, not just listening to it, makes exercising easier. For more on the science of music and fitness, I'm joined by New York Times phys ed columnist Gretchen Reynolds. She's on the line with us. Hi, Gretchen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So before we get to this new study, what do we already know scientifically about music and exercise?
Well, what science has shown pretty persuasively is that the body responds to music. And in fact, I spoke to a researcher for a column I did a while ago who said that there are only two creatures on Earth that really respond automatically to rhythm, and that's songbirds and humans. And so our body does respond without even our volition. We respond to music. If you're listening to fast music, your body wants to essentially sync itself to that music. Your heart rate will increase. You will actually find that moving around feels easier. Doing the exact same thing, say running for 5 minutes, will feel easier if you're listening to music than if you're not.
Right. Neuroscientists talk about this process of entrainment, where, you know, the sort of the rhythms of the activity in your brain will begin to sync up to the rhythms of the music that you're hearing. But now this new study by Tom Fritz, who's been on Soundcheck in the past, he works at the Max Planck Institute in Germany, this new study takes it another level. The suggestion here is that making music while you exercise is even more effective than just listening passively to someone else's music.
Yes, it's a really fascinating study, and it does advance our understanding of how the body responds to music. In this study, the scientists first developed a kit, essentially, that they could add to exercise machines, that they could add to weight machines or a stair-stepping style machine. And when they put this kit into the internal workings of the machines, they became big music makers. They became machines that when you, say, pull the weight bar down, would make sounds. And in this case, they were it produced electronic music, a fairly fast 130 beats per minute kind of electronic music. And you could vary the melody, you could vary the speed, you could vary the tempo depending on how you pulled down the weight machine or how you pushed it forward if it was a different weight machine. And so they had a group of volunteers learn to use these machines. They're very common workout machines. And they taught them how to use them so that they could actually vary the sounds that were being produced. And then they had these people working in groups of three. They had them work out, and they found that when the people could make music with their workout, they not only worked harder, they produced more force when they were doing the weight training, but they also reported that the workout felt significantly easier than when they were not doing this, and easier than when they were just listening to music, they were not making the music.
Right. So they had three different groups. One just doing the weight machines or the stair stepper, another doing the weight machine or the stair stepper with music, and the third group doing the weight machine or the stair stepper with this electronic music kit where they were actually controlling the sound as they worked out.
And what's particularly interesting in that is that when the group was listening to music, they were listening to another group making the same music.
Yeah.
So they were actually listening to the same kind of music, but they were not getting as much physiological benefit as when they made the music. Their bodies responded significantly more to the process of contributing to the music they found the work much easier, even though they were actually working harder.
Mm. Now, Tom Fritz practices what he preaches and has posted a pretty funny but very effective video on the web of himself working out on two of these machines that have been fitted out with these electronic music kits that Gretchen Reynolds is talking about. Here is a little bit of this distinguished neuroscientist huffing and puffing with great soul. That's a little bit of Thomas Hans Fritz, or Tom Fritz as he's known, neuroscientist at the Max Planck Institute in Germany, working out. Now, he's on two machines, sort of playing simultaneously there. It's a video that he's posted. We're speaking with Gretchen Reynolds, who has written about this study that finds that actually making music, controlling the sound while you work out, can be really effective in boosting the amount of energy you expend and in making it feel like it's not that stressful and not that hard. She is the phys ed columnist for the New York Times, and you can find a link to her article, How Music Can Boost Our Workouts, on soundcheck.org. Gretchen, what does Tom call this kind of musical workout thing?
Has a rather marvelous phrase for it. It's called gymming with a J, for jamming, only with the Y from gym. So you're sort of gym jamming. And what I would point out from listening to that music, and obviously people, if they're listening on the radio, can't see the video, mm-hmm. but even as I was listening, my toes started tapping. I wanted to move along with it. And that It tends to represent what they call, and what Dr. Fritz calls, emotional motor control, where your body is responding to essentially an emotion and moving to it. And it appears that if you are making that music, if you are contributing to it and not just listening, the emotional motor control is intensified significantly. Your body wants to move even more than if you're just listening to the music.
Hmm.
So it's the same effect as listening, but intensified significantly.
Now, it strikes me that most gyms are not private. You know, we go to a public gym to work out. So if you've got one of these, pimped out machines with the electronic kit and it's making noise and you're controlling the sound and stuff, the people around you are hearing what you're doing, and maybe they're trying to get a different sound. So I don't know. I mean, I guess there's a couple of kind of logistical things that need to be worked out
here. I agree, although Dr. Fritz found that when they had these groups of three working in concert, groups of three people, they tended to start almost unconsciously doing their workouts so that the music melded in a way that was not necessarily pleasing, but that they did start to sort of intertwine the melodies from the different machines without even really trying. And I think that would actually be rather interesting to listen to.
Yeah. So a little kind of like live jamming. Almost like
live jamming.
Yeah, right. It's like electronic chamber music, you know?
Yes.
I contribute my part, you contribute your part, and we're all getting a good workout while we do it.
And they didn't tell people to do that. They just started doing it. And these were not musicians. These were just healthy adults.
So have you, Gretchen, had a chance to put this into practice at the gym at all?
I have not. I do tend to sing to myself, and I mentioned in the column that at the moment that may be sort of the closest you can get to actually making music. I tend to hum to myself when I am working out and not listening to music. I will actually find myself humming a couple of different tunes. that do tend to motivate me, and that I pay attention to those and not to the effort of working out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Gretchen, does this study say anything about, you know, does this have any implications for how music got started, how people, you know, why people might have begun making music in the first place?
Well, certainly Dr. Fritz thinks so. I mean, it appears the implication is that making music makes hard effort easier. And early man had a lot of hard effort in his life, whether he had to break rocks to make a shelter or hunt animals or any of those sorts of things that required a lot of physical effort. If it's easier to produce physical effort by making music, then it makes sense that people started singing along as they hiked or as they were part of chain gangs or any of that.
Right.
And there is a long tradition in human society of music accompanying hard effort.
So work songs were some of the earliest forms. I mean, I think it's in The Golden Bough, the book by James Frazer, where he talks about why people thought music was magical, because a bunch of people trying to haul that carcass of the mastodon or the mammoth, whatever it is, out of the hole that they dug in the ground, you know, couldn't quite do it, but if they were all synchronized, if they're all going kind of heave-ho or some kind of rhythmic, you know, gesture, some kind of rhythmic vocalizing, they would be able to get the job done. And they kind of felt like that was magic, you know,
the implication from this study is that there is a certain magic to it, that it does make something that would otherwise be very physically hard easier.
Gretchen Reynolds' column is called, her article is called How Music Can Boost Our Workouts, based on this fascinating study from Dr. Thomas Hans Fritz at the Max Planck Institute in Germany. And Gretchen, as you say, these electronic kits not available yet, but we'll look for them hopefully in the future sometime, since this really does seem to be a very promising study.
And Dr. Fritz says he has gotten a great deal of attention from or interest from companies that make weight machines about potentially starting to incorporate this. So that will be very interesting.
All right. Check out Gretchen's article on our website at soundcheck.org. Gretchen, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is Soundcheck. Up next, a live performance in our studio from the Colorado-based neo-bluegrass quartet, Yonder Mountain String Band. This is Soundcheck.
I'm sorry, I promise you. I'm sorry, I'm coming home. Don't worry, happy birthday.
This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. The bluegrass group Yonder Mountain String Band are at their best playing outdoors, especially a big outdoor venue like Red Rocks in their native Colorado. Wind blowing through their hair, the vast spaces of the open west behind them, feeding off the energy of a big festival crowd. So we brought them into downtown Manhattan and stuck them in a studio. Hey, it's worked before. Our Soundcheck listeners loved them when they were on the show last year, so we've invited them back. Here is Yonder Mountain String Band, once again live on Soundcheck with a song called Lay It on the Line.
Thank you. sight is how I see. Far, far away and out of sight is how I feel you. Through the dark times, days of fading wonder. As I reach for you, I keep pulling myself under. Petty ways keep a man at bay, this I swear to you. You can run all you want, but you won't get far, this I promise you. See the signs, the skylines, oh Lord, I cannot tell. What real may be, it remains.
That is Yonder Mountain String Band, live in our Soundcheck studio. The Colorado Band making a return appearance here in New York with a new song called Lay It on the Line. Yonder Mountain String Band is Jeff Austin on mandolin. Jeff also sang that song. Ben Kaufman on the bass, Adam Agila on guitar, and Dave Johnston playing the banjo. Guys, it's good to have you back here in our Soundcheck
Thanks
studio.
For having us back.
Yeah, man.
Who, Jeff, you sang that. Did you write that
I
song?
I did, yes. I did on both counts.
And when you brought it to the band, did anybody say, that set of chords sounds just like Pinball Wizard?
Oh, now you ruined it. No, you know, we... I think one of the cardinal rules of any band is if somebody brings in a song and it somehow might sound like something else, say a Pinball Wizard,
right?
Just don't say anything. Because if you say something, for the eternity of when you play that song, you'll sit there and go, oh, it sounds like Louie Louie. It totally sounds like Louie Louie. It's totally Louie Louie. It's Louie Louie. It's Paperback Writer.
It's only Pinball Wizard for literally two chords before you started singing.
I can accept, well, my prior music career, you know, anyway, we won't talk about that.
Okay. So the band is back here in our studio. I mean, I was sort of having some fun in the introduction. You guys are from Colorado. You are used to the great wide open spaces of the American West. You do the festival circuit. How is it for you guys to come into a little studio, whether it's ours or to make this new EP that you've done?
It's all, you know, I like it. It's just a different landscape to kind of hang out in. You know, it brings different things out of you when you hear things in different ways. Standing in front of a ton of people at a festival is one thing, or standing in front of a bunch of cameras in a studio, you know, it's it, mm-hmm. it and if you have the strange ability to embrace both of those things, and you might want to think of a career in music, this might be for you. So you know, I enjoy it. I think it can bring different levels of creativity out of one's brain, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, the particular studio that you recorded this EP in was that was Electrical Audio in Chicago,
yep.
right? That's
yeah.
Steve Albini's studio.
Yeah, it was really vibey. It was great to be in there.
Was he there?
No, mm-hmm. No. So but the energy was there. He may have been there.
All right. So this EP is part. The plan is to do what? Four of these?
It's there's a plan. There's an idea. You know, it all comes from one thing, but, you know, just trying to find a different way to kind of get material into people's hands mm-hmm. and have it be mm-hmm. something that's exciting, you know?
So each of these EPs is planned to have four pieces, one by each of you.
It seems it might be headed that direction, yes.
Okay. That's very democratic of you all.
Well, you know.
Yonder Mountain String Band here playing some of the new songs that they have not yet recorded, and you'll do one from the EP in a little while too, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
The EP, Jeff, is called YMSB EP 13. Really?
It's been a long year. Look, it's been a long year. It kind of says it like it is.
Well, yeah,
we're trying to make music at this point that just tells it like it is, uh-huh. so, you know.
So that means that next year's YMSB EP 14.
You would think that, wouldn't you? You'd jump right there, wouldn't you?
I would.
Untrue.
And then I would wonder, what will you do 3 months, 4 months later when it's still 14 and you have another EP?
Well, we might give it a Fiona Apple-like title that'll be 97 words long.
Okay.
The cat and the kitten struggle over the milk while the cow is the one who goes over the milk.
Can't you just call it EP13C or EP13S?
I kind of like what Jeff just did, though. You see, that was very clever use of
radio.
Of the microphone
Thank
to
you.
Be backing away as he sort of ran out of recognizable English syllables
He's
to
good.
Use.
That's what I did yesterday. That's how I prepped for this. 12 hours in a hotel room.
Their EP, called YMSB EP 13, is out now, and on it you will find a version of this next song. All the Time is the name of it. Once again, here is YMSB, Yonder Mountain String Band, live on Soundcheck.
Through a misty frame, barely see a path to follow. Not that I know where to go, not that I am running away. I just know that I can't stay. True to every word, freight ends like a dream. Wake me if I cry out loud, hold on to me one more day. Faded feeling drifts away. No more time I fear. All the time same. No more time I fear. All the time unclear. song songs. See no more. No one calls. Overdone. Free from harm. Forgiven. Unspoken. Tear out one more page, learning from yesterday. I just need to find a way. Well, daylight drifts away, barely see a road to follow. Not that I know where to go, not that I am running away. Just know that I can't stay. No more time I fear. All the time unclear. No more time I fear. All the time unclear.
Nicely done. Yonder Mountain String Band, live on Soundcheck with their song All the Time, which you will find on their breathtakingly titled EP called YMSB EP 13. I love it. I love it. So, Adam, you sang that one. Does that mean you wrote it?
It does.
So is that usually the tell, whoever is singing it?
Actually, it is in most cases. There is one instance where Ben has kind of written this story that is a number of songs. And there is different characters in it, one of which I play a character, so I'm singing a song that he wrote. There's also another one that we don't play very often that Jeff sings that Ben wrote as well.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, yeah, that I would say in general, if the person singing it, then that probably the person who came up with at least the lyrical ideas, if not the whole song.
All right. Jeff, is that a Guster shirt that you're wearing? I can only see the G-U-S.
No,
okay.
It is a Gus's Fried Chicken, Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
If you haven't eaten at Gus's, you haven't had fried chicken. Try their Mendenhall location. More seating available now.
The reason I thought of Guster is, I mean, you guys have been on the jam band circuit with bands like them and OAR and String Cheese Incident and stuff. And that part of the industry seems to really be kind of chugging along.
Yeah.
How is it for you guys? You allow taping and all that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That's totally the it is this scene that we find ourselves in. It is happening right now. I know, and part of this EP discussion too is a sort of a reaction to what is going on. And I think what you're talking about for a band like us, an independent band, financing ourselves, buying big name producers, isn't necessarily the best use of money. I got to be honest with you.
Right.
And at the same time, it is vital to have content delivered to people's hands. That's what they want. And you can see it happening all over the place now. Mm-hmm. Content, 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 and get it to them.
Has digital media sort of changed the landscape for you guys the way it has for, say, indie rock bands?
You know, what's the thing? Since the first gig we ever did, and partly because of who we were listening to and what those bands encouraged, we encouraged tape trading. Record our shows, give them to people, and what happens then is you go to St. Louis for the first time, and there's 20 people there, and they've heard of you, as opposed to nobody being there, mm-hmm. because they got your CD or whatever. Well, the side effect of that is people get very used to just trading music around. So when you release something, they're going to burn it. They are going to distribute it. We've never made our money from record sales. We make it from you coming to see the show.
What? It's like, right. It's like a business card almost, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think of it as just another, you know, it's another way to write, too.
Yonder Mountain String Band, Jeff, Ben, Adam, Dave, guys. It's been a while since you were last here. Good to have you back. Thanks so much for playing for
us.
Thanks for having us. Absolutely.
By the way, there's more where this came from. You can watch video of Yonder Mountain String Band and hear an extra song that they recorded here in the studio, all on soundcheck.org. Tune in tomorrow night for election night coverage, and then join us back here on Wednesday for Soundcheck. Violinist Hilary Hahn will join us. She's been commissioning composers to write short encore-style pieces for her, and we will hear some of them played live. Plus, the renowned conductor John Elliott Gardner talks about his biography of J.S. Bach, and an in-studio performance from veteran songwriter Mark Mulcahy. That does it for the program today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.